but hard to achieve is because it seems like it's not biologically sound or it's not biologically supported. And to start with genetic monogamy means that the offsprings of any given female, only come from one male. So there's one father who sires all of the offsprings of that female. And so that female is genetically considered monogamous. Let me just say, Armand, right at the onset, we're going to use the word monogamous and polygamous, even when we mean monoandrous and polyandrous, just for simplicity of delivery, I guess.
We're saying to the people who would break those terms down, the psychobiologists out there, the biologists out there, we're going to interchange the words because otherwise we have to be explaining it every time we use the word.
The accurate word for a woman who has several husbands would be polyandrous, but it gets too complicated, so we're going to use the word polygamous, even though we do know that that refers to a man with several wives.
We're also going to use the word promiscuous, even though that word has a pejorative sound to it. You know,
but we don't mean it pejorative.
No, when somebody is promiscuous, what's the definition of promiscuous by our usage?
Yeah, it just means a person, an individual. It could be a person or an animal or a living organism that has sexual intercourse with several different partners as opposed to just one.
So promiscuous is you got a lot.
Promiscuous means you don't
have
just one.
Means you feel free to have sex with just about anything.
No. No, not quite like that. It means that you're not faithful, sexually faithful, to just one individual.
Faithful is a funny word. So let's say sexually committed.
I guess every time we talk about sex, Armand, we're bound to find these words that have, even though they have a meaning that is just the scientific meaning or the literal meaning, it's going to be loaded with layers and layers of meaning.
It is the stuff,
you know? Just because it's the way it is. So,
and it's the way it was built. We're going to explain that. But let's stick with the definition for a minute. Genetic monogamy is where you started?
Right. Genetic monogamy means for a female to have offsprings only with one male.
Now, of course you're going to have offspring only from your male, but you make a point. How is it possible that a woman can have sex with only one male but still have babies with a different father?
Mm-hmm.
Is that possible?
It's possible.
Now, wait, let me hold that question for a sec. The question is, can a woman have sex with only one man? Can she be monogamous, sexually monogamous, and still bear the child of another man?
Yes. It's
and the
possible.
Answer is yes. And how is it possible? All of you are trying to figure this out there. Here comes the answer.
The answer is this, that the woman could be having sex only with one male, but if that male has sex with another female and the other female has had sex with another male, the first partner, the first male, could transport sperm from having sex with the second female. He could transport, unbeknownst to him, of course, sperm from the second male to the first female. Now I made it really confusing, didn't I?
Okay, so let's see how it works. If a man has sex with another woman other than his wife,
right,
and she just had sex with somebody else, right, and there are live sperm inside her body, he could take those sperm inside him if he doesn't wash himself off, go home to his wife, has sex with his wife, put the other guy's sperm mm-hmm. inside her, she can become pregnant with the sperm of the other male.
And it has been documented this has happened.
This is a little like the toilet seat theory.
Well, it's,
you know, I mean, it really
let's just say the toilet seat theory is really nothing to worry about. That doesn't happen.
But how about hot tubs? That's got possibility.
Very difficult. They're almost impossible.
And by those, we're talking about the different possibilities of pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
you know, that are possible, almost impossible, but not totally impossible.
Not totally. In theory, it's possible, but I'm not sure it's ever been documented. But this one has been documented.
So genetically,
impregnation by transport, I guess.
Yeah.
By transport. By secondary transport.
And
so this female, even though she's sexually and emotionally monogamous.
Socially and sexually monogamous, because we haven't said emotionally monogamous.
Okay, well, but whatever. But she's not genetically monogamous.
Right, because she's got a baby from somebody else.
Right, and she probably wouldn't even know it.
And she wouldn't know it.
Right.
And so she'd have a baby.
It. Right.
And she'd look down and she'd say, I can't be the mother.
Well.
And that's, yeah, I know, it's very confusing. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Auntie. You know, monogamy is a strategy. It's what it is. It's a strategy. It's a strategy that humans developed.
Yes, it's a political and economical strategy, most of all.
Yeah, not just humans. I mean, animals developed it as well. Some animals developed it. But, you know, you've heard about animals that are monogamous, right? And the ones who are famous for being monogamous are what, the fox or the wolf?
A lot of birds are monogamous, and a lot of monogamy described in zoological discourse refers to seasonal monogamy, so that it's not a lifetime monogamy, but it's, you know, if every season when there is a reproductive
right.
activity going on,
one
partner per season. But that does not mean that the next season is going to be the same
right.
partner.
Right, Mr. Penguin and Mrs. Penguin for
right.
that year.
Right.
So really, you Although know, that there, was, that
there
was
are
my
some.
Wife in 98.
Right.
Right. This is my wife in 99.
Right. Yeah, I like that. And then you have all the pictures on the wall of all their wives along
the
way.
So we should
year.
Have seasonal monogamy.
Seasonal monogamy is another one. Well, but then there are some animals that have been described as monogamous. I think even wolves.
Yes.
Are considered monogamous, right?
But now here becomes a question. Here becomes a question. I love the way I said that. Here becomes a question,
here
Roberta.
Here becomes a question.
Is it true? And the answer is no.
No. No, there's no such thing as monogamy.
There
really.
Is no species that has proven to be monogamous. DNA research, and, you know, and that means they go through and they look through the cells and they pick up the DNA evidence and they look through and they say, oh, no, this guy wasn't monogamous. There was non-monogamy. There was
polygamy. Now that we have the technology to ascertain paternity 100% with 100% accuracy, what has been found is that even the species that had been considered monogamous historically, because we see the pair that stays together for life and they are so bonded with one another that you could never imagine them being with anyone else, you know, like the parrots, the macaws, you know, those kinds of birds. Well, it turns out that the monogamy is social monogamy. So in this greater society of these individuals,
well,
we
didn't go there yet.
It appears that they're monogamous, what we mean by monogamy really is having one main relationship with one individual, but then having other things on the side.
There we go, another definition. We're going to finish with the first three definitions: genetic monogamy, sexual monogamy, social monogamy. Social monogamy means you got one partner, and that's it. You got a partner, and it's your partner.
In the eyes of the world.
In the eyes of the world, and the eyes of the other guys in your gang, and the eyes of the other guys in your cave, and the other guys in your forest. Those two, here comes Mr. and Mrs. Giraffe.
In your flock, in your pride, in
wherever
your
it is, here they come. Those two go together.
Buffoonery,
right? You know, do you know the giraffes? They've discovered giraffes have a high incidence of homosexuality.
Hmm.
How do they do it?
That's the question. That's
the question. Okay, we'll come back to that.
Eventually,
the images just are amazing,
right.
Flying all over the place. Okay, sexual monogamy is sex with only one partner.
Right.
So clearly there could be social monogamy. I love you, you love me, we're together, we're partners, and I may have sex with somebody else or you may have sex with somebody else.
Right.
Whether by agreement or by hiding or by not by agreement, there's social monogamy, there's sexual monogamy, and there's genetic monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Just by definition.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take it from another place. There is monogamy between two people where they have social monogamy. Husband says to wife, or boyfriend says to girlfriend, or boyfriend says to boyfriend, you and I only, we are going to be social partners, and we are going to be sexual. So now you're sexually, socially monogamous and sexually monogamous.
That's the agreement.
Okay, now let's take a typical male-female combination. What if the man says, okay, I am going to be socially monogamous, but I'm going to be sexually polygamous, while the female says, I'm going to be socially monogamous, and I'm going to be sexually monogamous. See, that's another combination. It's another combination that if we had it defined, it would be he would have an SP as opposed to an SM. You know what I mean? He was socially monogamous.
Mm-hmm.
Or if she said, I'm going to have other men, but I'm not going to have, but I'm going to be, you're my mate.
Mm-hmm.
Or if two partners said, I'm going to be exclusively sexual with you, but I'm going to go out on a lot of dates. Right?
It gets a little complicated.
There you have a social monogamy. It's social polygamy.
Yes.
But sexual monogamy. I only have sex with the guy next door.
Mm.
Right? But I go out on dates with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, in nature, there's a tremendous amount of this, well, here we go into women having sex with a lot of partners while they are socially monogamous.
Mm-hmm. You mean in human society?
In nature in general.
Well, in nature in general, it seems that the most successful reproductive strategy is this kind of monogamy that says, I have one mate and I'm committed to that relationship, but I am not going to be sexually faithful to that one mate. And the sexual philandering, should we call it, is implied, but it's not admitted. It's not acknowledged. And it's usually actually rather explosive when it becomes known. That seems to work best, actually, in all kinds of societies, from human to gorillas to foxes and wolves and birds. And that seems to be the kind of monogamy that works best in terms of the reproductive advantages of genetic improvement. Because
we're going to slow that one down, Roberta.
Why? What, where am I going?
No, you're going fine. What works best is an assumed monogamy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lie.
Yes. Well said, Armand.
You know, it's an assumed.
It's a stated monogamy that it's a lie. Yes.
Alpha male gorillas, right? Mm-hmm. The alpha male, the silverback gorilla, he looks over at his woman, right? His females. He has a few females.
Right.
And he says, okay, you're the alpha females. And you're all mine, and you don't belong to anybody else. This is his harem.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turns his back, and he goes off and eats a banana, right? Or he's having sex with somebody else. And they are secretly having sex with all the bees,
mm-hmm.
the bee gorillas.
Yes.
But he doesn't know about it, because if he found out about it, he'd kill the bee gorillas.
Well, he would have to kill them, because that's what nature requires. It seems that the genetic improvement of the species requires that the alpha male is very territorial in that kind of society. But Armand, here I'm going to say something revolutionary. I believe that underneath the alpha male, if he sees the tryst going on, he has to kill. So he looks the other way, meaning he does not know it. But in a way, it's ingrained in the genetic, you know, in the behavior of the group, because this is the most productive strategy. So somehow, I guess we have to live with it.
So and you're saying, I know you're going to say, you know, many wives know that their husbands cheat and they just look the other way. We're going to get there eventually, or vice versa. Silverback gorilla, right, is walking in the woods, deciding to have some alone time. Hears some grunting over in the corner. Uh-oh, what is that sound? It's one of my wives having sex with a bee boy. That's the bee gorillas.
Yes.
Right? And he says to himself, I better not look. If I look, I'm going to have to kill him.
Uh-huh.
Right? So better than having to kill him, I'm going to go to my higher self. I'll meditate. And he sits down and he meditates. and he finds his higher self. So this way, he doesn't have to go back. That's what you believe.
Kind of.
I know. It kind of makes sense. You know, we're going to, before we just take a short break, you want to know what Drosophila is? I mean, Drosophila is fascinating. There is a culture that believes that monogamy is terrible, that you can't have monogamy. This is among an insect world, but this is what they do, the Drosophilics. Whenever they have sex with a female, they give a female a bit of poison. And if they have, it goes with the sperm, they inject a poison, a toxin, specific to this female, somehow they produce it. So that if they have sex with the same female, the female gets a double dose of this poison and it kind of stays in her body. And if they have sex with the same female over and over again, eventually she dies and so do her offspring because she's had sex with him too many times because he's put too much poison in her.
See, that's exactly what I said before.
So in the Drosophilics, they always move on to somebody else because they're poisoning their mates. They may be socially monogamous, but for the sake, out of love, they hit the bars.
Yeah, well, you know, exactly. There's a question. One could go all the way back to the question of why have sex at all? Why bother with it when it's the source of so many difficulties? And in fact, one could argue that all of the violence in the world really comes out of some kind of sexual problem, more or less. And in fact, it turns out that sexual reproduction is indeed the most successful in spite of all the problems it brings, because it is the only way to create diversity. Enough diversity that life is given every possibility that could imaginable. And so there is an advantage even within the many seeming disadvantages.
This is Armand Dumas with Roberta Mariotti at WBAI. In case you just tuned in, we are talking about monogamy, and we want to talk about where it comes from and where this evolved from. And you have to understand, monogamy is a strategy. It's an idea. It's a concept. It's a matter of control.
Monogamy in biological terms is kind of a theory without a practice to go with it. Oh, I like that. That's a good quote.
Good idea.
I like that quote. Okay.
Let's write that down.
Meaning that, you know, monogamy in reality doesn't seem to work, and doesn't seem to work socially, doesn't seem to work emotionally, but most of all, doesn't seem to work genetically. You know, it doesn't seem to work in the best interest of evolution.
Well,
it seems that evolution thrives.
Before you go there, let me ask that question.
In promiscuity.
Evolution thrives in promiscuity, but social monogamy seems to work. The pairing of people seems to work.
Right. See, but now then this is where we need to go with this, which really, Armand, I don't think I've ever heard anyone discuss this kind of thing on air. So this is wonderful. Monogamy is a concept that comes out of humans attempting to structure their relationships and attempting to define what it means to be committed to a group of people, attempting also to prevent violence, because in a way, monogamy is a way to prevent males from killing each other all the time.
Well, let's look for a minute. It's one of the range of behaviors that includes territoriality, timidity, training of the offspring, intensive foraging. Now, these are things that take place in tropical forests. You know, now in the tropical forest, you're chronically food limited. You don't have as much food available like you do on the savannah. So you've got your kind of limited food. You got to have your energy available for being able to conserve your energy. And one of the ways they conserve it is they try to do sexual exclusiveness. So the animals, and what they tried to do was this, animals and the early humans tried to do sexual exclusiveness as a way of stopping the expenditure of energy. In fact, my friends, monogamy is a sign of a starving. It's a physiological mechanism designed to adjust behavior to an environment that has been, is a starving environment.
Where there are limited resources.
Yeah, like we're saying we have to be monogamous because there's not enough energy to go around.
In fact, when you look at the hunters and gatherers, which there aren't that many left, but originally all humans were, we were all hunters and gatherers. Monogamy really did not exist, not in the way we mean it today. And it really started with the pastoralism and agriculture phase of evolution.
When was that?
10,000, 15,000 years
when
ago.
When they started growing farms?
Well, think about it for a moment. If you're a hunter-gatherer, you're not accumulating any possessions because you have to move all the time
around,
to follow
right?
your prey. So you can't accumulate anything. It would be too difficult to carry. So you travel light.
Let's make that, I know that's an assumption, but for people to know, hunter-gatherers are following their prey.
Right. So they don't plant anything.
Wherever the animals go, that's where you go.
And hunter-gatherers, because of that style of foraging, can never overpopulate because there aren't enough resources to maintain that lifestyle. It's only after we started with agriculture and pastoralism, which means we stopped moving. We settled down somewhere and we claimed a piece of land and we claimed the animals on it and we put a fence around the perimeter and we said the animals contained in here are my animals, and we started genetic engineering and then we grew the plants that then we make into bread and vegetables and whatnot. Then we accumulate wealth. Once we accumulated wealth and so there was something at stake, something that could be lost over genetic battles, that's when monogamy became, well, I guess one of the favorite strategies. And also, I think that we need to say, Armand, that monogamy has different advantages from males to females. And maybe
wait, that may be too much at once. Let's just hold it a second. When we built it in as a strategy, one of the things we did was we built it into religion. We built it into a religious concept. We gave God the power. And we said, God says you should only do this many times with this many people. You know, and we turned it over. We had to enforce it somehow. We couldn't enforce it just by ourselves.
Well, it's interesting, Armand, that we, for as long as we were the hunter-gatherers, we had deities that were sexually active. I don't want to say promiscuous, active. And we had both male and female gods. But then, once we started with monogamy and with this whole idea of possessions and protecting the possessions and the genetic output, then the God idea became the bachelor male. Actually, God doesn't even worry about monogamy because he's
a
bachelor, right? So,
it's
interesting how the
Mary Magdalene.
But that's a whole other story. In fact, I believe that
get you on that.
All right. So let's not go there. So it's interesting to see that monogamy really is a political move. And it's a political move designed to control possessions, land, animals, wealth, power, you know, the whole bit when you really look at it.
So if you look at, you know, the good old marauding hunter-gatherers, sets up a little fence and he says, this is my brick. This is my rock. This is my hut. This is my axe. This is my, I guess this is my woman. All right, this is my woman now. Now you're mine. And before that, they didn't really become property of. You know what I mean? Now you become my property. And now you're my woman. Now she says, oh, yeah, I'm your woman. You're my man. Now this possession thing, this idea of possessing, that's the birth of this concept of monogamy. Mm-hmm. Now, nowadays, here we are in modern life where everybody believes nobody belongs to anybody. Nobody owns anybody.
But I think it's really ingrained in us because, you see, before we started, I think, Armand, that there was a time when humanity didn't even have a concept of accumulating possessions. It just didn't enter the people's minds that anybody could own anything and claim it as their own. It just seemed like the world, you know, like animals are, they're territorial, but they're not possessive. Well, I guess maybe territoriality could be looked as a form of possessiveness, but not in the way that humans mean it. So monogamy is really an offshoot of the concept of owning things and owning people and owning offspring. That's when monogamy came into the picture, and I believe it came into the picture to protect people from the violence that could explode over possessions.
So it was kind of an agreement.
Yeah.
You stay away from mine, I'll stay away from yours.
Right.
Okay, but in this agreement, there was some biological imperatives that said, oh, that agreement doesn't work completely. So then there are women, females, who say, wait a minute, in order to have the best possible baby, it is to my advantage to have sex with as many males as possible, as well as my own male. So, and this is true biologically, that a female, and many female animals do this when they're in estrus at that point, they will go and have sex with many so that the sperm will compete and that the strongest sperm will survive. That actually the presence of somebody else's sperm makes the sperm even stronger.
Well, that's the biologically successful, most successful strategy.
Most successful strategy.
But that's in polygamous societies. That's
but
where
even
sex
if it's
is
not,
free.
It's in monogamous society where nobody's looking. Because for some reason when somebody feels an impulse, I got to go out and have sex elsewhere. Who knows if they're not following a biological imperative to spread their seed or to collect sperm?
Well,
you
yes.
You know what I mean? I mean, you don't know. You think it's, oh, I must be something wrong with me.
So we're trying to control natural momentum.
Which is maybe what we should be doing.
By corralling this energy, and the energy kind of slips out from underneath us. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, get this statistic, my friend. Only 10%, or 90%, 10% of the babies who are born in the human race are born to a mother, but not to the husband of the mother.
10% of the babies are born outside of the committed relationship.
They are
born
sired
to someone
by someone other than
other
the husband.
Than the husband,
the husband doesn't know it. Sired by someone other, 10%.
It's a lot of people.
Look on a subway. Hmm. 1 out of 10 women are having relationship with somebody else.
Hmm.
Right?
Yes, and that's the way nature designed it to be. And in fact, you know, I mean, there is an argument in favor of this modality because if reproduction stayed within the choices of the female, if the female was completely in charge of who to reproduce with and when, first of all, she would have children, you know, not one after another, and she would have them with at least 5 years in between, because that's how the body of a woman is designed to function, ideally. And also, females are designed to have a kind of intuition that tells them who is the best mate for them at what time. And it could be this mate this year, but 5 years from now, when I'm ready to conceive again, it could be a different mate. However, for the way we function in human society, because we want to possess things and land and the way we want to own things, that doesn't work. That doesn't match our political and social structure. So we created monogamy. And now it seems to me that people are trying to live with it, are trying to do the best they can. And there is something to be said for loving one person at a time. There is an exquisiteness about that. But it doesn't seem to work in the end, because no one seems to be able to maintain it.
I mean, maybe it could work. But just know that there's a difficulty to it. Roberta, it's like I'd like people to consider, what would it be to have a monogamous agreement? What is the assumption? First of all, I ask almost every couple, what is your agreement that you have? And people think when they're married, you will not sleep with anybody else, nor will I. And then I always kind of break it down, just because I want to hear the definition. What would it be to be faithful? Well, let's try a definition. Give me what you think the average response would be.
The average response would be faithful to me means not having sex with anyone else but my mate.
Right, being faithful. If you're saying, if I'm saying, okay, Roberta, you and I will have an agreement, you will not have sex with anybody but your mate.
Right.
Right?
And vice versa. If it's a reciprocally faithful, committed relationship.
So in a monogamous, reciprocal, committed, stated relationship, mm-hmm. you two agree, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that include kissing? What if he kisses somebody else?
Okay.
What if he's at the office and they're kind of having a little wine and they're hanging around after work and and she says, well, I got this new lipstick. You want to taste it?
Well, I guess, you know, that would depend on the couple, whether they
I'm
would
consider
that. I'm
asking you now.
Me
now, in your,
personally?
No, not you personally, but in this agreement, wouldn't as a woman, the average woman, say, well, that's cheating.
Hmm.
Right? I mean, kissing. If I walked in and saw you kissing somebody, I'd throw a chair at you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
I mean, certainly if a man
think,
walks in and
I
sees his
think,
wife kissing somebody, you throw a chair
I would
at
think
him.
Generally it would be considered cheating, yes.
So now we're beyond sex. We're now kissing. What about holding hands?
Mm, well,
if you're holding hands and walking down the street and you're walking in front of me and you're my wife and you're walking down the street holding hands with somebody else, I'm going to hit you in the back of the head.
Mm-hmm.
So now, a sexually monogamous commitment includes no contact with another human other than your husband. It's interesting because this begins to sound like the Hasidim, and the Hasidic Jews have this kind of relationship. You know, the woman does not make any contact with any man other than her husband.
Well, when I first went to Afghanistan, the women were wearing a sheet and you couldn't even see their eyes, and they were not allowed to go into the market or to even walk outside the home by themselves. And if you saw them, they were wearing this robe that does not allow, cannot even see their fingers.
But they were allowed to touch their husbands. Their husbands were allowed to see them.
Well, only.
Only, right.
Only the husband, yes.
So contact is what I'm talking about. You can have contact with anyone else, may be the agreement or may not be the agreement. Can you shake their hands? Oh, yes, you could shake their hands, but you can't hold their hands. How long can you hold their hands? Is it 3 seconds or 5 seconds? And you begin to see it becomes almost impossible to define. And then if you pinned it down, somebody would have to say it's about intent. It's about the spirit of it. If when holding somebody's hand and shaking somebody's hand, if you're doing it with a sexual intent. So now the new rule is thou shalt not have sexual intent with anyone else.
You know, it's interesting, Armand, what you're saying, because when I was a child and I used to spend my summers in the Adriatic Riviera, we children used to see these beautiful Swedish women, Norwegian women, German women, the blonde women, we used to call them, come down and actively seek Italian men to have sex with. But the sex was purely intercourse with no kissing, no holding, no emotional exchange, no love in it. In other words, it was purely mechanical. And we were told that this was acceptable in the Northern European lands, that the husbands knew, in fact, that these women, their wives, were going to spend, you know, a few weeks down in Italy on the sea, having fun, etc., and having sex with the Italian men, but that they were okay with it as long as there was no kissing, as long as there was no exchange of love, and as long as the women didn't become emotionally attached to anyone. They could have sex with as many men as they wanted to.
And it's a funny thing, Roberta, you know, because during sex, even during this disconnected sex, kissing could become part of the sex.
Of course. In fact, I could never understand that.
How do you, if I sloppily, my lips pass your lips, it's not allowed, then you get up and say, oh, how could you do that to me? What do you think I am?
Well, in fact, that's why I'm saying it, because it confused the heck out of me. I couldn't figure out how these women could have sex with all these men and not feel anything. I mean, and not become emotionally involved with any of them and not exchange a touch of the lip or so. I mean, where is the boundary exactly? Where is the boundary? And that's,
so,
I guess, what we're
saying.
So
monogamy is where the quiet is, because then it becomes a little funnier than that. And then men, in their attempt to try to keep themselves within the reins of what they think is proper, now they retreat into fantasy. And they retreat into fantasy, and used to be magazines. Everybody would have a Playboy magazine hidden under their mattress, but now it's the internet, or it's the Playboy channel. And if you go on the website, if an average woman goes into a computer and searches her husband's history, she's going to see he went to a number of porn channels. And she sees that he went there, and she'll challenge him, what were you doing there? Or she'll walk into his basement room, where he suddenly set up a basement room, where he spends his time. Now, if you're not allowed to have sex with anybody else, are you allowed to have sex with yourself? Is that still monogamy?
As long as you're thinking about the right person, I guess.
You mean you have to be thinking about...
about the person you're committed to.
So monogamy is not having sex in action or thought with anyone else.
Right. Becomes very...
You're not allowed to think of another person.
I guess even while you're having sex with the right person, but you're not allowed to think about anybody else.
You can't look at a...
Can't fantasize.
What if you could look at a porn film with your wife and have sex with your mate?
Yeah, it's tricky.
Now, is it no? It's still fidelity because she knows about it?
I guess.
What if you're thinking about some bonobo that, you know, because you're not allowed to think about humans, so you're thinking about the monkey? It becomes very difficult because you cannot control it. See, the whole idea is control.
The whole concept is
about control.
Right, it is.
We're going to control your mind. We're going to control your penis. We're going to control your vagina. We're going to control your sexuality. We're going to control your touch. We're going to control your kiss, control your love. We're not going to let you have it. We're going to control it, and then we're going to say, and then we're going to wonder why it appears like a pimple in other places. Why does it burst out? Because our attempts at control are so difficult, and my friends, it may be the best thing to do. This may be the best way to have a relationship. It may be the spiritually most solid thing to do, for all I know. It may be the next step for mankind. I am not saying that polygamy is better than monogamy. What I am saying is that monogamy is more than a thought, more than a strategy. It's something that if you could feel it and follow it, that would be beautiful. But if you're going against yourself, and then the signs of you going against yourself manifest, get to understand, okay, there's a reason why this is bursting out. We're not promoting one way or the other. We just know it's not so simple.
Right. Wow, you've said a lot, Armand, and I think the interesting thing to be aware of is what we really want in monogamy is control of the other person. We want to be able to have control over what they feel and when, and we want to have their exclusive devotion. even if it's not sexually faithful, but as long as it's emotionally devoted, for some people that's acceptable. In other words, I must be number one. And it becomes, you know, I was thinking about Margaret Mead, the famous anthropologist who took the time to go to Samoa and spend time in Samoa, and she did this beautiful historical piece of work about the teenagers there, where she studied the sexual behavior and the sexual health of Samoans, starting from the teenagers. And what she found in her work was that the teenagers in Samoa, they were encouraged to have sex encouraged to follow their hearts and follow their urges and discover who they were through sexuality and assert themselves, both male and female. In other words, there was no censorship and there was no guilt and shame attached to sexual behavior. In fact, the parents would help by providing safe havens where the kids could have sex without risking being attacked and robbed and mutilated or something. And so this culture was very, she found, very harmonious and peaceful, and the relationship between men and women were extremely civilized and positive and happy. And then she compared it to the mental health in the U.S. and in general in civilized post-technological countries. Well, and I guess you know what came out of that study, that unfortunately we're not even close to the level of harmony and mental health and physical health that the Samoans enjoyed back when they were still Samoans. Now I think they're civilized too, unfortunately.
Mm. What did the boy Samoan?
What?
What did the boy guy say to the girl guy on that island?
What?
What does he want?
What does he want?
Samoa.
Samoa. I knew it.
Give me Samoa. Of course. Roberta. Roberta Marianti, we'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. My friends, this is fascinating stuff, don't you think? See if you could digest
212-209-2950.
While we're doing
let's
this.
Let's keep calling.
And here's something for you, just to break you. 212-209-2950. Where will we find peace?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that exquisite? That's Paul Gonzalez.
Sweet.
G-O-N-Z-A-L-V-E-S. Paul Gonzalez. I dropped that. Fortunately for children in society, mothers often have more than one. They use a polyandrous motherhood. Mothers line up multiple possible fathers and sequential fathers, facilitated by a widely accepted folk belief in a partible paternity. In other words, every man a woman had sex with in the 10 or so months preceding a birth is considered a possibility. And this is in the Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
In the Amazon, they believe that the way you have a baby is that every time you have sex, the sperm adds to the sperm, adds to the sperm, adds to the sperm, and it becomes called a partible, P-A-R-T-I-B-L-E, paternity.
So that every man contributes to a little bit of
every
the baby?
Every man contributes to a little bit
what
of the baby.
What a fascinating concept.
You know, and so therefore the baby that's born is everybody's.
Interesting. Well, I did watch a documentary about a tribe in the Amazon. It's one of the last hunter-gatherers societies in existence, and it's still matriarchal and matrilineal because that's what hunters and gatherers used to be. And the way it works is like this. A woman chooses her first husband, and they have a baby. And then when the woman feels that it's time for her to conceive again, she chooses a second husband with the approval of the first husband. And then the second husband becomes the forager for the first husband and the wife and the first baby and the second baby.
Forager meaning goes out and gets the food.
The second husband, the last husband in line, is the one who goes out hunting. So let's say the woman accumulates six husbands. Well, then the first five husbands stay home, and the last husband goes out and hunts for all seven of them, plus all the children. Why is this advantageous? Well, it's certainly advantageous to women, and I'm sure everyone can understand that and why. But it's advantageous to men, because if you give your wife's approval in getting another husband, you don't have to work anymore. You can stay home with your children, and in fact, that's what these men do. They stay home and they help with raising children. But it's especially advantageous to the children because they have fathers present in their lives every day of their lives, which is a luxury that most of us did not have. It seems like in our culture, well, many children grow up barely knowing their father because the father is out all day long, and when he comes home, he's too tired anyway.
Here we are, my friends, talking about monogamy and polygamy and polyandry and polyandrous motherhood. And, you know, if you think about polyandry, which means a woman with many men, right?
Right.
The real question is not why do men cheat. The real question, according to nature, is why aren't the women cheating? Because according to nature, it is the women who should be out there with as many fathers, as many men possible. It is the women who are designed to have as many mates and partners as possible. And that is going to be what will keep our species going. And it is not a matter of the men are designed to be the ones who have the most infidelity or the most sexually active, the women. But the difference is that it is the women when they are in estrus. So now we come down to a very important part of what happened to humans. Estrus disappeared. Who is estrus? You remember estrus? She used to live on 47th Street. Estrus is when you're in heat. So you see, all animals before us, they would go along and they didn't have any sex because they weren't ready.
Being in heat means ovulating. When the egg falls down from the ovary through the tube and it lands in the uterus and it can be reached, if it's reached by a sperm, it gets fertilized and it embeds itself into the endometrium and there you have it, there's a baby. So now, that's what it means being in heat, ovulating.
Ovulating, and that means estrus. Estrus means now I could have a baby. Now I could have a baby means I'm ready for you. Ready for you, whoever you are, means I'm going to send out chemical signals. I'm going to move around a certain way. I'm going to wear that special outfit and that short skirt I bought. And I'm going to tell you and everybody out there, I am ready for sex because it is that time of the month for me. Now, this is what all animals did. See, all animals before humans. Humans came up with the idea. They said, wait a minute, if we do that, well, what's the danger?
If we do that, the danger is that after conception, the father is going to leave and go to another female who is in estrus. When our estrus disappears, if it lasts only 2 or 3 days, we could...
He's gone, and I
got nobody to protect my offspring, most of all. Because
in fact,
women could even... I mean, yeah, they need protection, but the baby is really the one who needs the most protection.
So if I don't want somebody to eat my baby, I want to keep the man around.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that humans developed a strategy to keep the men around is they hid when they were in estrus. They made believe they were in estrus all the time. So human females look like they're ready to have sex whenever.
All the time, right.
All the time. Now, many of you women know that there are certain times of the month that you're more ready than other times. You actually feel it.
But no one from the outside could tell the difference.
Unless they know you well, you know, and
right.
They say, I think I'm going to date her in the first few days. You know, I mean,
in the first few days of what?
When I know she's the most ready.
Right. Well, I think it was a very successful strategy.
Sure.
Obviously, it worked, although it had some serious repercussions. But yes, it did work. One of the things that it did was, you know, women created this monogamous idea in men. Because really, Armand, you said the question is, why aren't women cheating? I think the question is, why are men pretending to be monogamous? Why do they put that expectation on themselves? Why do they feel that they have to? Well, I think it's because it has become the belief that that's the right thing to do, that it's right to be committed to one woman and to her offsprings that she has with you. That's what a good man does. And
because...
Yeah.
Because your woman is ready all the time.
That's what she gives in exchange.
Right.
Right.
That's what she gives you all
so
in exchange.
So that you never get denied. I mean, yes.
No, it's true. Because you never get denied sex. But now what happens when you start getting denied sex because you smell like beer? You know,
really? People
things
get
begin
denied.
To change.
Hmm.
I don't know if you smell like beer. What are the reasons that women deny men sex?
I think you said it before when you were talking about the relationship series, when they're angry.
Right, when you're angry.
For whatever reason.
When you're upset. When you don't feel like just saying, okay.
Let's
know.
Say that the men's relatives are too intrusive. That
uh-huh.
could be a source of anger. Let's say that money is not enough. Let's say that,
frustrated with your own life.
Could be in a number of things that, no, but in the sexual, in the, I think in the relationship, anger, that the woman builds up about something the man does or does not do is what gets in the way of desire.
So then her always being ready for sex gets turned into a, maybe if you're good, I'll give you sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And this is a different condition. And then he, sensing this, and this is nobody's wrong. The woman's not wrong. The man's not wrong. It's just the design begins to break down after a certain period of time. So committed monogamy begins to falter after a certain period of time if you don't know how to handle, especially your disappointments, angers with each other. Then what happens is you go down to the basement and you look on the internet and you start masturbating. Mm. And you start finding other ways to kind of satisfy whatever urges you have. But then that gets discovered and you begin another mess over that. And then these poor folks, two kids who got married, who didn't know anything about marriage, who didn't know what being a man was, who don't know how to handle relationships, who don't know how to deal with anger and frustration and grief and regret and remorse and accusations. They're trying to live together in this house. And he goes to work and he has this adoring secretary who says to him, gee, you want to try my new lipstick? You know, and things begin to happen.
Hmm.
This is nature working. This is not just. This is nature at its fault.
Yeah.
This is nature breaking down the design.
Yeah.
And it's, my friends, there is so much to it that tomorrow, as part of the program tomorrow, I'm going to continue with this. I'm going to put more into it. I have reams more information into it because we only had 2 hours with you today. You've got the good basis of it. But what I want to offer you is I want you to be part of the design. I want you to ask me the questions about monogamy and infidelity. Without accusation, try to send me your questions to Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com. Send them to me, and let me look at those questions tonight. I want to see what are your questions about marriage, relationships, infidelity, especially around the issue of fidelity. And what do you think? What are your questions? What do you have? What's in your heart? And I'm going to try to address them tomorrow.
Armand, what about polyamorous?
What about polyamorous? Let's talk about it.
Polyamorous is a new style, not that new. I mean, I think it started in the 60s with the sexual revolution, so-called, or with the, you know, whatever went on in the 60s that I'm not going to label or define. But something changed. And traditions were challenged, and one of the things that people started doing was this polyamorous kind of family relationships, which does not mean swinging, does not mean being sexually not careful or irrationally or obsessed with sex.
It
means that couples agree that even though they are in a committed relationship with each other, both partners are free to find other partners with whom they can develop other committed relationships. And eventually, it gets to the point where, let's say, three couples could decide to all live together, and some of the partners could share other partners, and some of the partners may not if they don't want to. But also, the interesting aspect is that the children who are born from a polyamorous family have a lot of parents. They could end up being raised by eight people in the same household. And, you know, I mean, you could object to it, but some of these families work really well in terms of what the children are getting. They're getting a lot of adult attention and a lot of adult love and care. So, you know, it's something interesting to look at. And again, the same thing as with homosexuality. There are a lot of fundamentalists out there who are up in arms about it and trying to make it illegal to have such families, you know, whatever. But in any case, it's an interesting offshoot of monogamy because it is a form of monogamy.
You know, and it's another one of those things too, Roberta, because we've interviewed a couple of people here who are from polyandrous communities.
Polyamorous.
Children mm-hmm. from. And the thing that they were missing is boundaries
mm-hmm, sure.
in their lives, any sense of boundaries. So when they walked out and they walked into the world, they were very confident, very beautiful people with no sense of boundaries. And this became a problem. So it all becomes, it's not that any one of them is a style. I mean, you know, it's all okay. It's like in every one of them we have to learn, in every one of them we have to see. Weren't the bonobos polyamorous?
Bonobos are polyamorous for sure.
For sure.
But Armand, I guess the point I'm making is if it works for people, Why not? Like you said, there's something that we can learn from everyone.
Because once there's the sexual part settled, there's always going to be an emotional part that doesn't have to do with the sexual. So if you get somebody who's a borderline personality who lives in a polyamorous relationship, they're still going to be a borderline personality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still going to be, if you're carrying a lot of baggage, you're still going to carry your baggage. But I think it's very valuable, Roberta. You know, I think it's very valuable information. And we only have 3 more minutes.
What are we going to do in these 3 more minutes?
We're going to ask people, 212-209-2950. I want people to give us their call right now. This is it. We have 3 minutes, maybe 2 minutes. I'm going to steal this time.
And I want people to, and I want to thank people for...
Oh, well, if you want to thank people, you can thank them right now. This is for people.
Oh, there we go.
Thank you very much,
yeah,
friend.
This is
thank
for you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody out there, for making
your
calls. We did very well. 212-209-2950. I'm thanking you. Thank you.
Well done.
Well done. Everybody in the room there, I want to thank very much in the tally room.
Very sincere applause.
And Michael G. Haskins, I want to thank you very much.
And people. Jennifer.
Jennifer and WBAI, mm-hmm. all of you over there, I want to thank you very
mm-hmm.
much.
And thank
take
you,
a bow.
Armand.
Take a bow. Thank you, Roberta. Would you take a bow, too?
Uh-huh.
All right. I'm going to take a bow. 212-209-2950. Go to your phones.
There you go. A standing ovation.
Thank you. Thank you very much.